quick reminder of where we are and what we're going to do. So we had the conductivity equation in omega. We defined the Dirichlet to Neumann map. It's the normal component of the current for a given voltage F. And let's see, two times ago we showed this determines gamma on the boundary and d gamma d nu on the boundary. I didn't really show it determines d gamma d nu, I just told you the proof uses similar methods. But we did go through gamma on the boundary in detail. Okay, and then last time we showed that if you have the Dirichlet to Neumann map, for omega, and if you have a known conductivity, you can compute the Dirichlet to Neumann map for the larger domain. So we, by going to a larger domain, let's call it omega tilde. We computed lambda omega tilde gamma tilde, and thus reduce the problem to the case gamma identically 1 near the boundary. And of course we go back to now assume this. And denote omega tilde gamma tilde by omega gamma. So forget about that notation, just go back to the old notation and just assume gamma is identically 1 near the boundary. Where are the graduate students? Yes, it is. They fail. Okay. So, by the way, Alex asked, so I showed that if gamma is known here, you can go from this Dirichlet to Neumann map to that one. And Alex asked, what about going back? Suppose gamma is known here and you have the Dirichlet to Neumann map out here. Can you go back? And I indicated to him that, in fact, you can. It's not a good map. So, I mean, it's mathematically, this data here determines the data on omega. But the map that takes you from here to there is only densely defined. It's an unbounded map. But I want to make the comment to him and to everybody else who cares that, in fact, going this way is essentially what we do when we go from far away, from, in fact, from infinity, from the scattering amplitude. Which is, morally speaking, like a Dirichlet to Neumann map at infinity. From this determines the Dirichlet to Neumann map. And the number of open problems about whether the scattering amplitude at fixed energy determines the potential were solved this way, by going from this to that for potentials of compact support, and then using the kinds of theorems we've been proving in the course. All right. Now, once we do this, we made the change U equals, or W equals gamma to the 1/2 U then W satisfies a Schrödinger equation. This is in fact F, since gamma is 1 on the boundary. And if we define lambda Q of F to be the normal component of this solution, this is equal to lambda gamma F, since gamma and d gamma d nu since gamma is 1 and d gamma d nu is 0 on the boundary. Now, we don't need this, but it just makes life simple right now. By above simplification. So the problem was reduced to 1 for the Schrödinger operator. We are given this, and therefore we're given the Dirichlet to Neumann map for the Schrödinger operator, and so we want to need to show here Q is Laplace gamma to the 1/2 over gamma to the 1/2. Need to show lambda Q determines Q. So in fact, we'll show lambda q determines gamma. Okay, so how do we do this? We extend Q so maybe I should also remind you what the main theorem for the course is. The main theorem is omega bounded Lipschitz in R2. Higher dimensions are easier, and I indicated how we do that. Gamma has two derivatives in LP. And I'll put here positive. So you'll know gamma. By trouble of embedding this forces gamma to be continuous, and we're assuming they're positive. Those are the only assumptions. Then the equality of the Dirichlet to Neumann maps implies that of the gammas. Moreover, we give a constructive procedure to recover gamma from lambda gamma by solving linear integral equations. So this is basically the main theorem we spent the semester on. Still haven't quite done, but we still have 2.5 hours. So I should note in passing that these two steps I described to you in a constructive manner. So for this I gave you a formula, and for this I also gave you a formula for the Dirichlet to Neumann map out here. That was the 6th Dirichlet to Neumann maps lemma in terms of that one. So now we're reduced to finding a formula for gamma out of lambda q. So the way we do that is we extend q to be identically zero outside omega, q in LP. So compact support. And define a new object which we called the scattering transform TK of Q. So this is a function, Q is a function in R2, this is a function in C. I I will recall the definition of T in a moment. And so the remainder of the proof of the theorem consists of the two main steps. Of how, given lambda q, you go to t. So this is by linear equations on the boundary. And then from t to go to gamma. And this is linear equations in K space, in the K complex plane. One, two. So let me recall the definition of T. And one of the main motivations is that this is like a nonlinear Fourier transform of Q. So that's why one of my main motivations for inverse problems is that I'm doing nonlinear harmonic analysis. So how do we define T? So we construct, we showed that for Q of the form Laplace psi naught over psi naught, there is for every k c minus 0 a unique solution psi xk of minus Laplace plus q psi equals 0 in R2 with psi xk e to the minus izk minus 1 in W1 p tilde R2. Well, in fact, we said L infinity intersect LP tilde. That's enough for uniqueness, and then it follows. question? Yeah, z is x1 plus I x2. So there's a unique solution like that. We write mu is psi with this exponential taken out, and define t to be ekz q mu. So ekz is e to the I kz plus k bar z bar. So that's the definition of t. And so the linear part of t starts out with mu equal 1. I mean, t starts out with a linear part where mu is 1, and that's just the Fourier transform of q. Okay, so that's the overall setup. Now, I want to talk about step one. If we know the Dirichlet to Neumann map, how do we compute t? So let me give you, so for step one, we have the following theorem. Okay. Let SK be the single layer potential corresponding to the Fadeyev-Green's function. So now I'm going to spend a lot of time today about telling you about details about this SK. So today is in some ways a lesson about layer potentials. So I'll just say more about SK to follow. So I'll just write down formally what it is, so you should have a sense of what we're doing. So there's this Green's function which we need so as to obtain the desired exponential behavior at infinity. Out of this Green's function, we make this layer potential. So with that notation, here comes the theorem, the statement of the theorem. So assume omega is bounded Lipschitz, Q is in LP, and zero is not a Dirichlet eigenvalue of minus Laplace plus Q in omega. So that's certainly the case if Q is of the form, if Q comes from the conductivity equation. So this is more general. You need this to be able to define lambda Q. So this will be on the web. Great to have your sneeze recorded for posterity. So if you look at this problem, right, then there are some values of lambda, of little lambda, called Dirichlet eigenvalues, where the Dirichlet problem does not have a unique solution. So these are discrete, they go up to infinity. So I'm simply assuming zero is not one of them. By the way, one can show that the Dirichlet to Neumann map is a meromorphic function of this parameter with poles at the Dirichlet eigenvalues. Okay. But as they say in novels, I digress. So these are the only assumptions. Then, for any k in C minus non-zero complex number, one, Sk lambda q minus lambda zero is a compact operator from H a half to H a half. What is lambda zero? Lambda zero is the Dirichlet Neumann map for Q identically zero. Two. Why do I care about this? I'm now going to find the values of this particular solution on the boundary. So psi on the boundary satisfies the integral equation psi is e to the I zk minus this operator, which I claim is compact. So when I say you need to solve linear integral equations on the boundary, this is the linear integral equation I have in mind. Okay, so, all right, let me just continue with the theorem. I plus, so this is the operator in that linear integral equation, is invertible from h a half to h a half. If and only if k is not an exceptional point. In the forward problem. So I'll remind you what that is, what that means when we get to it. But it basically says if psi is well defined, then precisely for the k values of k where psi is well defined. Now, in the Calderon problem, that's true for every k. So this is an issue for other problems, but it's nonetheless an interesting one. So if k is such that psi is well defined, this will be uniquely solvable. And four, well, I advertised that I can get t from lambda q. So what does that have to do with that? Well, if you integrate by parts, t is e to the I z bar k bar lambda q minus lambda 0 applied to psi restricted to the boundary. Okay, so what does this tell you? This tells you that if you give me the Dirichlet to Neumann map, you have given me, by the way, omega, so I also know lambda 0. So I know this. I do finite elements or whatever on the boundary of omega, and for every k, I'm able to find the trace of psi on the boundary. So that's a linear integral equation. And I then plug this into here, that's a formula, to get t. And that accomplishes step one. Okay. So perhaps this is the time to just quickly review what happens for step two. So quick review or preview of step two. No, I want to make a remark, sorry. I want to make a remark, which is why, just to explain to you why I'm interested in part three the way it is stated. Remark three shows that one can compute, one can determine. The exceptional point from the boundary data. Why is that? Well, because, you know, think of these as matrices. You just take the determinant of that operator, of that matrix. The determinant will be zero if and only if you're at an exceptional point. And so, and to know that determinant, all you need to know is the boundary data. So the story of the exceptional points we don't have time to get into, but people are interested in something we haven't discussed much, which are inverse spectral problems. Suppose I give you the Dirichlet eigenvalues, let's say. Can you find the potential? So I mentioned the Borg-Levinson theorem that we have for that. So this is a bunch of discrete numbers. We know they don't determine the potential in general. You need some other information. Well, these exceptional points tend to be curves in the K-complex plane. I conjecture that there is one for every eigenvalue, which is below below zero. And then if you also vary the frequency, so we've been working at lambda equals zero. If you vary the frequency, you will get two-dimensional surfaces of exceptional points. I'll write this down. So if we vary the frequency, i.e. look at minus Laplacian plus Q, W equals lambda W, lambda in C. We obtain surfaces of exceptional points. Well, that you obtain surfaces, that's not true. are they singular? Maybe that's not conjecture, but I mean this one can show. I mean, you can just count the parameters. But what I'm saying is that now, so this is in some sense spectral data, right? This is K-plane, right? But now, all I'm trying to say is, let's see. So I mean, this is we're working really in the plane zeta squared, in the variety zeta squared equal lambda. Now, for zeta squared equals zero, we've parametrized it by, so when lambda is zero, this is the K-plane, because it's K-I-K. For different lambdas, so I mean, it makes sense to then look in here and count the dimensions of this exceptional set. So what I'm saying is that frees you from this discrete set of numbers to a more general question, if you like, spectral problems. Are these surfaces of exceptional points, do they determine the potential? And here there's some sense that if you have a radial potential, you know, you can use these numbers to define somehow the radial dependence, at least up to a point. Now I'm starting to talk science fiction. And here, you can tell, for instance, this is a fact, you can tell from the look of these exceptional curves whether the potential is radial or not. So you can find the radial dependence in the way these surfaces look. So I'm just indicating that these are problems I'm in principle interested in, and that 3 tells you, look, you can get all these surfaces if you have the physical Dirichlet to Neumann map. So it makes sense that these are not just the eigenvalues, but their extension in the complex plane are things which one can in principle measure. Yes, sir. Pardon me? It means look at different lambdas. So I mean, in quantum mechanics, this would be the energy. Acousticians call it the frequency. All right. So let's see. I have 5 minutes. Let me, since this is a little too vague. Let me just remind you what the exceptional points are in the forward problem. So this is recall. So this is the definition of the construction of psi in the forward problem. Now we factored out the e to the izk and wrote this as mu equals 1 minus little gk q mu. Call this star since I'm going to be using it. And we defined K to be an exceptional point if this is not uniquely solvable. If I plus GK Q inverse, if this is not invertible, we thought of this as a map from LP tilde or W1P tilde to itself. So we showed it's compact, so this is Fredholm of second kind. It's invertible if and only if it's injective. And so if it's not injective, you say K is exceptional. And we proved, this took us a while, we proved that if Q comes from the conductivity equation, equation, there are no exceptional points. Well, actually, I should say we prove more than that. We prove that there are no exceptional points if and only if Q comes from the conductivity equation. So informally you can think if this is in omega. If Laplacian plus Q is positive in omega, you're in the case of the conductivity equation, and there are no exceptional points. At energy zero. Okay, so if you don't enjoy this, you can completely erase it from your mind. This was a side trip to justify why I formulate part three in that more general form. But it is not needed for the Calderon, for the main theorem. Okay, so next hour will be on layer potentials. There are a lot of people working on spectral, inverse spectral problems. So I just wanted to advertise this. Not many people are looking at these exceptional points, and I think there's a lot there. No. So, not that I know of. So at least I show that you can get them out of physical data. But the whole point of these exponentially growing solutions is they are, quote, non-physical. On the other hand, I think they're rather natural in that for these elliptic inverse problems we're looking at, there are ways to understand that the data somehow decays exponentially as you move away from the boundary. So, in other words, if there's a difference between conductivities of epsilon here, at the boundary, it'll be e to the, what is it, minus one over epsilon, something like that. So it makes sense that to try to probe from the boundary going in, that we're essentially testing the Dirichlet to Neumann map on solutions which grow exponentially, so that we should get some information about what happens deep down. Okay. So this we'll leave on for later. This is the theorem we're trying to prove. Running out of space. So now we're going to talk about layer potentials. And this is some of this I only cleaned up last night, so this is not in my paper. And I think it's a nice way to understand the layer potential business. So, recall. So today, it's okay. Layer potential. The layer potential SK. Recall that we denoted that that convolution by little gk, little gk is this Green's function. So here kxc means k1 plus ik2 complex multiplied by xc1 plus ikc2, and xc squared means xc1 squared plus xc2 squared. Convolution by this is the operator we denoted by MK, and we found, or we even actually defined it to be MK, we worked a lot with it, minus 1 over 4 IK D bar inverse minus D plus IK inverse d d bar inverse. Now we proved that mk f w s p tilde was c over k to the 1 minus s f l p for s between 0 and 1. And now what I want is some other estimates. So this by, let's putting this by building up from the Hardy Littlewood estimate for d bar inverse from LP to LP tilde. And and also for the Calderon-Zygmund estimate that this is bounded on LP. The Yearling transform. So it's a singular integral operator. Now, what I want to do is I'd like to, since I'm going to do H1 half on the boundary, I want to move to L2 estimates. So the point of these was to allow Q in LP. If you stay in L2, Q has to be bounded if you want an operator from L2 to L2. So now I'm simply going to say we also had, this is something else we spent some time on, the Nirenberg-Walker estimates bar inverse goes from LP delta, sorry, L2 delta, let's say, and DD bar inverse is bounded on L2 delta. So now you go back to MK, so using these, in proofs paralleling those we had earlier, we can show, but won't do it here, that MKF H S delta is less than a constant k to the 1 minus s f L 2 delta minus 1. Now, there's an advantage to staying in L2. Moreover, since we have the Laplacian right, what's the equation that M satisfies? It satisfies Laplace minus Laplace minus 2ik d bar, or 4. If you look at this, right? This looks like Laplace plus 4ik d bar in Fourier domain. So MKF equals F. We have Laplacian MKF equals minus 4ik d bar MKF minus F. So F is in L2 delta. The derivative of mk, this is s up to 1 here. The derivative of mk is in h1, mk is in h1 delta. I'm sorry, this is wrong. From L2 delta to L2 delta minus 1 on this side. So the derivative of mk is in L2 delta minus 1. So this is in L2 delta minus 1. Right? This is L2 delta more decaying. This is L2 less decaying. So this space is inside this bigger space. So disregarding the k dependence, which we aren't worried about right now, so fixed k, what I'm saying is that we have mkf bounded from L2 delta, in fact, into all the way to H2 delta minus 1. MK bounded. Okay, so H1, this works as before, and to get H2, we did it here. Now, what about MK transposed? MK transposed has kernel G y minus x, and I claim that G, let's look at G of minus x e to the minus I x c squared plus 2kxc dxc. How do I get rid of the minus? I change xc to minus xc in the integral. So that's g minus kx. What happens is the k changes to minus k. So mk transposed is formally equal to m minus k. Okay? Now, what can we say about MK transposed? Here, it goes from the dual of H2, which is H minus 2, 1 minus delta, into the dual of L2, which is L2 minus delta. So if I take delta prime equals 1 minus delta, delta prime is between 0 and 1. So I have mk transposed goes from h minus 2 delta prime into, well, what is minus delta? Minus delta is delta prime minus 1. Delta prime between 0 and 1. So that's the same as delta to delta minus 1. And so putting these together, by interpolation, we thus get mk from hs delta to hs delta minus 1. This is for s 0. And this is for s minus 2. And by interpolation, we get all the ones in between. In particular, I'm going to, right? Because, I mean, now I can just call this delta. Delta to delta minus 1. Anything between 0, 1. This is of R2. So recall the Green's function for the Laplacian is e to the I z k little g. So let mk tilde be convolution by, so mk tilde f convolution by big G. which is e to the izk little g e to the minus izk, yk f of y dy. S plus 2, yes, thank you. That's important. So this is simply e to the izk mk e to the minus izk f. And of course, this is terrible. Well, this is a huge exponential, right? So you can't expect something like this. But in a compact set, if you don't care about the k-dependence, so in any compact set, omega tilde will have m tilde bounded from HS delta to HS plus, so omega tilde H delta minus 1. And I'll write here with terrible constants. You know, just estimate this as exponential to the, I don't know, diameter or size of omega tilde, inside and out, okay? Yeah. You know, here, right, it's going to be in HS plus 2 delta minus 1 over R2, and then I multiply it by a terrible exponential. Okay, so this was a preliminary song and dance. And I want to show you how, once you have these mapping properties for convolution by the Green's function, you can get properties of the single layer potential. So this is not how it's usually done. So what we want to define SKF to be the integral GK f of y d sigma y for f in h minus a half omega. So I'm going to treat this as a distribution in the plane. So given f, you give me a function h minus a half, define a distribution as it turns out of compact support f d sigma. So that's the notation. So I claim it's going to be in h minus 1 of R2 intersect compact support. So these are called, I guess, Schwarz notation as E prime. Okay, so if it's in something in H minus 1, I have to tell you what it does on something in H1. So given V in H1, let's say here's omega, H1 of R2. Define the action of F d sigma on V to be V on the boundary against F. So V on the boundary has a trace in H a half. F on the boundary is in H minus a half. So this is perfectly nicely defined. And so informally, so you should know what I'm talking about, that just means V times F d sigma on the boundary. Okay? So I get a distribution which is obviously supported, F d sigma is supported on the boundary. And so now, let SKF be defined as MK tilde of FD sigma. That's my definition of the single layer potential. So what do I mean by that? Thus, for any F in H one half, H minus a half, SKF is a function in H one locally. Why is that? Well, F d sigma is in H minus 1, and M k tilde takes H minus 1 to H 1. With weights, sorry, by the way, the weights don't I don't care about the weights here. This is bounded region. Delta makes no difference. X to the delta is bounded by 19 if you're in a, and below, above by 19 and below by 1 if you're in a bounded region.
Not the upper.
Not the upper. That one's fine. So it goes from H minus 1 to H 1. So last time Sarah was complaining, you have to be careful how you define it on the boundary. Well, here it is a function in H1. So in particular, SKF on the boundary makes sense as something in H a half. And moreover, right, it's clear that from the inside and the outside, and moreover, SKF plus equals SKF minus. So this is restriction from outside. And this is restriction from inside. So we have proved SK is a bounded operator from H minus a half to H plus a half. Now, the way this is usually done in the business relies on a deep theorem by Koifman and Meyer for boundedness of singular operators on Lipschitz curves. So I wanted you to realize that we've been doing something here, namely out of the Nierenberg-Walker estimates, which are relatively simple compared to the Koifman-Meyer business, we're able to prove boundedness of the single layer. In fact, smoothing property, not just bounded, but it takes H minus a half to something one order smoother. Now, why did I need that? Well, look at the basic equation we're trying to prove. Typically, the Dirichlet-Neumann map sends things into H minus a half. So I want this equation to be happening on H one half of the boundary. So I start with something in H a half. The Dirichlet-Neumann map sends it to H minus a half. Now I know S sends it back to H a half. So we know at least this integral equation, when we get to it, is well defined on H a half of the boundary. Now, here's the thing I discovered last night. What about the jump relation for the single layer potential, which I told you last time to just take for granted? So by construction, Laplacian of SKF is Laplacian of MK tilde FD sigma. And MK tilde is just a Green's function for the Laplacian, so this is FD sigma. Okay, so usually when you learn about layer potentials, you learn that SKF something like this is harmonic inside omega and harmonic outside omega. This tells you more. This tells you not just that it's harmonic inside and outside, but it tells you precisely what happens across omega. And I claim What does this mean? This implies the jump condition on the single layer. The jump condition that DD nu from the outside, DD nu from the inside of SK is F. So this is the standard property of the single layer. Right? It has two standard properties. One is that it's continuous across the boundary, and two, that it's the normal derivative has this jump relation on the boundary. And this is usually proved with some pain. Now I'm going to show you this is basically that. So let's call this star star. To verify this, let omega tilde be a compact domain containing omega. You don't really need it, but may as well. So I take omega tilde like that. Let V be in H1 zero of omega tilde, i.e. V is zero on the boundary of omega tilde. Then, let's just say here. Then star star in omega tilde means, right? What does this mean in the sense of distribution? Right? This is the Laplacian of something awful. Or not so awful, actually, something wonderful, something in H1, but we have the weak way of writing this. So it means that grad V dot grad SKF omega tilde equals F d sigma . This is for every V in H1 omega tilde, which is zero on the boundary, far away. Okay, that's what star means. So this is the same as star in the sense of distributions. Okay, now, by the definition of this FD sigma, what happens when you hit it with an H1? This is just VF on the boundary. On the other hand, I can write this as the integral over omega, by the way, these are L2 functions, right? SKF is in H1, V is in H1. Their gradients are L2. L2 times L2 is integrable. So these are perfectly nice integrals. And I'm going to split it into the integral in omega and the integral in the annular region. Here, omega, because this is f d sigma on omega. On omega tilde, it's zero. So it's just big, some big compact set. This is supported on omega. Okay, well, V is no longer zero on the boundary of this set. So what happens when we hit a harmonic function with the gradient of an H1 function, which isn't zero? We get what we called lambda zero SKF. So I should call it. That's my definition. So recall an earlier definition. D d nu minus. It's omega from the inside. Again, this comes from parts. It's integration by parts, but it's really a definition. It's motivated by integration by parts. But what do I mean by the normal derivative of an H1 function? In theory, it shouldn't exist. But for harmonic functions, by definition, it's equal to this. Yes? Okay. So what are the names? Kevin? Like that? Okay, so again, I don't want you to get confused by this. Suppose everything was nice, right? How would we, then we would take the divergence of V grad SK. By the divergence theorem, this would be V normal derivative. Well, it's on the inside, so I put D nu D minus of SKF. And here it would be grad V grad SKF plus V Laplace SKF. Now, this is harmonic, so that drops out. And therefore, this integral is equal to V against the normal derivative. Since the trace of V is in H a half, this defines this as an object in H minus a half. So we just define this to be the thing that does that. So this is the motivation. This is not part of the proof. This is just part of the, so you should know what's going on. Now what happens here? Here, the boundary consists of two pieces. There is a V dd nu SKF on boundary omega, but that's zero because V vanishes there. And then minus V dd nu plus SKF on omega. Okay, so we verified that V dd nu minus minus dd nu plus SKF equals boom 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 V. So this is on the boundary omega against F. So therefore, this is true as elements of H minus a half. And I have the feeling, I didn't check this last night, but I have the feeling you can go back. So I have the feeling that this statement, that the Laplacian SK is equal to this, is equivalent to the jump condition. And the fact that SK is harmonic inside. Okay, so that completes our preliminaries about single layer potentials. Okay, so this is the proof now of the main step, main theorem that does step one from the Dirichlet to Neumann map to the scattering transform. So, recall our basic identity, which connects the Dirichlet to Neumann map, which is an operator on the boundary to stuff that happens on the inside, that was basically our definition of the Dirichlet to Neumann map, where U satisfies the Schrödinger equation, and maybe we'll call this one U naught. No, V. Any V. V is in H1, so U on the boundary is F, and V is in H1, and on the boundary it's G. So now, let V solve Laplace V equals 0, V on the boundary is G. So that's a particular function H1. And let Q be 0. And the same formula gives you something like this. And so lambda q minus lambda 0. You can flip the lambda 0 here. We've seen this before. And we get the basic identity, which I'm going to use several times. Lambda q minus lambda 0 f G equals, let's call it Q U naught U, where U satisfies this and U naught satisfies that. All right, so this is a triple star. So to show you the fun of triple star, apply triple star to U equals psi. Psi satisfies this, so it's a valid U, and U naught equal e to the I z bar k bar. What do we get? We get integral e to the I z bar k bar lambda q minus lambda naught psi equals the integral of q e to the I z bar k bar psi dx inside. And that is T, right here. is e to the I z bar k bar e to the I z k mu. This is what we called e sub k. And that's t. So this is the t as defined in the forward problem. And now, using this basic formula, we have proved identity 4. So this proves 4. Thus, to determine, to calculate t from lambda q, it suffices to find psi on the boundary. If you have psi on the boundary, you have t. So I claim psi on the boundary satisfies this integral equation. I'm about to prove this now. Now, let x be outside of omega. Apply triple star to the function psi and the function g x minus so this is u and this is u naught. So note that. So let's call it u of y, u naught of y. So note that Laplace u naught is 0 in omega since x is not in omega. So g is a harmonic function. So again, these are valid candidates for triple star. And what do we get? We get lambda q minus lambda 0 u integrated against g. Well, g is the boundary value of u naught. This is gk. Equals the integral on the boundary, the integral over omega of u naught q u. Okay, now, look at star. This is our definition of psi in the forward problem. So here I have gk x minus y, q of y psi. So by star, this is equal to e to the I zk minus psi. Here z is x1 plus I x2. Uh-huh. Now what is this? If I integrate the Green's function against something d sigma, that is sk evaluated at x outside omega. Okay, now you go, let x go to the boundary, or take restriction to the boundary from the outside. SK has a perfectly nice restriction. This is a perfectly nice function. This is a perfectly nice function. They all have restrictions, and we get the equation, get the integral equation two. Okay, so this was easy. Now the issue is, how do you solve this integral equation? So, a number of people tried. So I think I'm just pointing out this was one of the crucial issues in the proof. A number of people tried solving this by showing that this operator is small for large k. To this day, we don't quite know if that's true or not. So you can't do this by a Neumann series. So what I was able to show is that simply this is a Fredholm equation, and that it's invertible if and only if the forward problem is invertible. Now, if you have a smooth boundary and smooth potential, you can show with pseudo-differential operators that this is a compact operator. So the challenge here is to show this is compact even though we have a Lipschitz boundary and a potential in LP. So how do we show that? Well, again, I'm going to use triple star. So we're simply going to do the following. So let Poisson operator sub Q of F be this U, just for notation. No, so that tells you it's bounded. I want to show it's compact. So this is notation. You give me F on the boundary. I solve the Dirichlet problem, and we know that's a bounded operator from H a half to H one. So this is proof of, what am I doing now? I'm doing proof of 1. Apply triple star to, so again, let X be outside omega. Apply triple star to U naught is GKXY, and U equals PQF. So we get GK lambda Q minus lambda naught F d sigma, which by now we know is SK lambda Q minus lambda naught. So that's precisely the operator I'm interested in. So now by triple star, this is equal to GK X minus Y Q of Y PQ F Y DY. Which is what we called M tilde sub K of Q PQF. At X. So convolution by G times Q times the solution of the Dirichlet problem. So again, restrict to the boundary from outside. And we get SK lambda Q minus lambda zero F, I won't say F anymore, equal, let's call this the restriction operator. So R goes from H1 into H a half, the restriction or trace operator. R MKQ PK. So the observation is that triple star allows me to factor SK lambda Q minus lambda zero in terms of these operators which I have estimates for. Okay, start with F, solve the Dirichlet problem, that's PQ. That's what you were saying? PQF, multiply that by Q, convolve with G, do R. Okay. So we know MK takes I need to end up in H1. It's smoothing of order. Goodness, of order 2. No. 1. H minus 1 into H1. Yeah, it's all log. I mean, these are compact already. So, PQ is in H1. So I claim that I could put here an embedding operator which takes let's say, so I goes from, let's say, LR to you don't even need H minus 1 here, but so PQ F is in H1. Let's use a blackboard here, write it big. PQF is in H1, which in two dimensions is in any L. I can't use a Q, I can't use, well, let's call it in any Q1 for any Q1 less than infinity. So Q is in LP, so QPQ is in where? LR, 1 over R is 1 over P plus 1 over Q1. And then this is compact by the Relish lemma. Or you could say this is compact by the Relish lemma. Okay? So this map SK lambda Q minus lambda 0 is a product of bounded operators. By the way, you end up in H1 and then bounded from H1 to the trace. So SQ lambda Q minus lambda 0 is a product of bounded so as an operator from H a half back to H a half is a product of bounded operators, one of which is compact, and compact times bounded is bound, hence it's compact. So that completes the proof of one. So 3 is the only thing left to prove. In view of 1, I plus sk lambda q minus lambda 0 is invertible on h a half if and only if it is injective. Since it's Fredholm. So suppose H in H a half satisfies I plus SK lambda Q minus lambda naught H equals 0. Out of H will construct a homogeneous solution to star. So out of H will construct a homogeneous solution to star, proving that K must be exceptional. To star, to the forward problem. In other words, this will require a little bit of work. So first of all, let V equal minus sk lambda q minus lambda 0 h for every x. We know this makes sense. V is in h1 log by the property of single layer. And V on the boundary, so this is on omega on the boundary, h is minus that equals h by our assumption. Okay, what else can we say about V? Moreover, Laplace V equals 0 in omega, property of single layer. So dv d nu minus is by definition lambda 0 h. What? That's the homogeneous. We're not there yet. No, it doesn't, because V is harmonic, and solutions of star are satisfy Schrödinger. There has to be a Q somewhere. Okay? So for the moment, I have a harmonic function everywhere. Yeah, this is just telling you what's going to happen. We haven't gotten it yet. I'm beginning the construction. Let V equal this, then that happens. On the other hand, also, by the great jump relation for SK, we have dd nu plus, dv d nu plus minus dv d nu minus equals minus lambda qh plus, no, I goofed. We're getting there. So I want to say lambda QH minus lambda 0H. I hope I have the right sign for the... for the jump relation. Right? So the jump of the single layer produces the inside gadget. But this equals that. We deduce that dv d nu plus equals lambda qh. Okay, now I'm going to construct my function. So now define u to equal pqh in omega and v outside omega. Right? I wanted to satisfy Schrödinger. So I claim this is my homogeneous solution. So claim minus Laplace plus Q U equals 0 in R2 and U E minus IZK is in W1 P tilde. i.e. k is an exceptional point. For the Calderon problem, we have shown there is no such u. Let me remind you, for the Calderon problem, in other words, when q is a Laplace psi naught over psi naught, we proved this was one of the crucial points of the proof of the main theorem. We proved this forces u to be identically zero. In other words, this proves that in the Calderon problem, this will prove this integral equation is uniquely solvable on H1/2 for every k. Well, or you prove that, I mean, if it is zero, then everything's zero and we're happy. No, I'm showing that any H that satisfies this must be zero. I don't need to know anything, whether it is or isn't zero. Therefore, it's injective. Okay, so how do we prove these two things? Well, number one, U minus equals H equals V plus equals U plus. Since U is V outside. And V plus is H. Du minus d nu is lambda q h. Why is that? Well, by the definition, right? If you take a solution of the Dirichlet problem and you take its normal derivative, that's what lambda q is. So this is by definition of lambda q. But lambda q h, I prove to you, is dv d nu plus, which is the same as du d nu plus, or d nu u plus du. So u and its normal derivative are continuous across the boundary. It follows, and Laplace u 0 in omega, Laplace u is 0 outside omega. These things together you can prove, as I mentioned last time, imply the equation holds throughout, across the boundary. Right, so with the, let's just put things together. For the single layer, which I showed you, if this equals something supported on the boundary, that gives you the jump relation. Well, here I'm saying there is no jump. Therefore, this should be zero. So it's a little exercise in distributions. Okay. Now, how are we going to get the tricky... We've been throwing out the dependence for large X. How are we going to recover it? Well, from the fact that V is built out of the Fadeev-Green's function. All right, so it remains to prove U e to the minus izk is in W1 p tilde. Let U tilde equals minus G, or I should say minus mk tilde convolved with Q U. So secretly I know, I expect U tilde to equal U. But I mean, I have this U, so I can just define U tilde. Well, U is in H1, Q is in LP, so QU is in L What did I call it before? R? LR for any R less than P. If I knew U were in L infinity, I would get QU in LP. Well, I don't quite get LP. I get anything less than that. So, MK tilde takes LR to LR, so E to the minus IZK U tilde is in W1 R tilde. Tell them I'm still busy. Okay, now what? Okay, now I do my favorite trick. I apply triple star again. Whoops. Triple star is here. So, I'm afraid I'll have to apply it here. Okay, so now apply triple star with U equals U and U naught equals G, U naught Y, X minus Y, X outside omega as before. And what do we get? We get SK lambda q minus lambda 0 boundary value of u, which is h, equals gk q u. So this is U tilde because of that. G is the is GK. Okay, well, what is this? This is what we called V. And that's what we called U outside. So U identical to U tilde outside omega. Okay, now they both satisfy, let's see, so what is Laplace? I'm almost done, folks. So Laplace of U minus U tilde is QU minus Laplace of U tilde is QU. So U minus U tilde are harmonic, is harmonic in R2, identically to zero outside omega. Hence, U identical to U tilde everywhere. So this shows U e to the minus izk, like U tilde, is in W1 R tilde. In particular, U restricted to omega is bounded. Right, by Sobolev embedding. Now we come back to this. If U is bounded, QU is in LP. So returning to U tilde is minus M. So now I bootstrap one step. U is bounded, Q is in LP, QU is in LP. So U tilde e to the minus izk is in W1p tilde. But we already know this is equal to U as claimed. Okay, so the point is, starting from H, I constructed a function U, which satisfies the Schrödinger operator everywhere, and I claimed and now proved that it has the prescribed behavior at infinity. We know this can't happen. Therefore, we can solve this integral equation, we get psi on the boundary, plug it into T, and we have a formula for T. And that completes step one. It also completes the time I have. So step two would have taken another 2 hours or so. Let me just quickly remind you, how is step two accomplished? Basically, we proved that d mu dk bar is something times t times mu bar. We spent some time on this. And so we know this is uniquely solvable, right? By Liouville's theorem, uniqueness is not an issue here. We know it's uniquely solvable, provided T is in the right space. So the remainder of the proof is to check that T for large k and T for small k makes this d bar equation uniquely solvable. Once we have this, we have mu, and then once we have mu, because of the behavior near zero, which I didn't get to, we get gamma. Gamma, the conductivity. basically mu at time zero, at k zero, is gamma to the 1/2. Well, we said we will prove that. We didn't get to the detail. Oh, thank you, thank you. So I hope I convinced you that there's some math to chew on behind this Calderon problem. And I hope that, as an aside, you learned a few analytic tricks.